Hello and a warm welcome to the European Respiratory Society podcast, a regular feature of the ERS Respiratory Channel. The topic of this podcast is, what did CFTR modulators bring us till now? My name is Miriam Stahl and I will be leading the discussion today. I'm currently the head of division of CF, consultant physician in the Department of Pediatric Pulmonology, Immunology and Critical Care Medicine at the Charité Universitätsmedizin Berlin. I am also the group leader of the research group Risk Factors and Therapy of Early CF Lung Disease, associated principal investigator of the German Center for Lung Research, Deutsches Zentrum für Lungenforschung, DZL, and last but not least, the secretary of the pediatric CF group of the ERS. Joining me in this discussion are Stojka Fustic and Markus Mahl. Dr. Stojka Fustic is a professor in pediatrics at the University in Skopje, North Macedonia, and head of the Department for Cystic Fibrosis at the University Children's Clinic in Skopje, and chair of the pediatric CF group of the ERS. Markus Mahl is professor and director of the Department of Pediatric Respiratory Medicine, Immunology and Critical Care Medicine at the Charité Universitätsmedizin Berlin, a professor at the Berlin Institute of Health and associated PI of the DZL. Stojka and myself, we both felt that CFTR modulators are the hot topic in the area of CF and also a diverse topic with several aspects that could be enlightened a little bit more. And we would like to hear from Markus how the CFTR modulator therapy developed over the last decades, because actually this is a very interesting journey we were all making together, and it's also something that could possibly be used as a blueprint for other diseases.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, because I think it's in the development of CFTR modulators as therapies that target the underlying cause of this severe genetic disease is really a breakthrough in pulmonary medicine in general. So if you ask me about the key developments, you know, I think of three key developments, and that all occurred in steps of about 10 years. So it all started with the discovery of the CF gene in 1989, and then about 10 years later with the development of high throughput screening to identify small molecule drugs. And then obviously, and again, this is, you know, it's a huge effort, and really, I think spectacular that everyone in the community worked together so nicely here, was the clinical development of the CFTR modulators.
Yeah, and the clinical development was really fast. So do you think that this is something that's more or less normal? Because as far as I know, the development of medication takes quite long from really getting from bench to bedside. And I have the feeling that this is a rather fast process.
Yes, I agree. And let me go back. I think what was really key to the success, you know, was not only the discovery of the disease-causing gene, but then also the unraveling, the elucidation of the molecular mechanisms, yeah, where it was found that there's a spectrum of mutations, and some mutations can cause the CFTR protein that acts as a chloride channel to insert into the membrane, but not function properly, that there are also problems, defects that cause abnormal folding and trafficking, as is the case for the most common mutation, Delta F508, but then also mutations that can lead to a complete lack of the protein. And this was important, this molecular understanding, because it could then be built into this high throughput screening. And this was not the first shot. The first shot at CF at targeted therapy was gene therapy. There was a lot of enthusiasm after the discovery of the gene. And let me put it this way, gene therapy, I think, is still a, you know, potentially interesting and promising approach, but it got stuck in clinical development. And then the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, they decided to invest in high throughput screening as a new strategy. they were able to build in all the knowledge that was obtained from basic scientists on the structure and the function of this channel to build assays that then allowed to test hundreds of thousands of compounds. And investigators were lucky that they identified promising hits. And I think this was really the foundation. And then, as you say, it happened relatively quickly, not without challenges. If you remember the first drug that was also approved, ivacaftor monotherapy, was a real proof of concept because it has enormous clinical benefit, but only in a very small percentage of patients with, you know, relatively rare CFTR mutations. And there was more work to do. That was not without hurdles. So the first combination therapy for patients with a common F508del mutation had relatively modest clinical efficacy. And it was again important to go back to the lab and understand the folding defect better and find out that there are probably at least two folding defects in this delta F508 protein. And only when that was sort of appreciated and the second corrector, the elexacaftor, was developed, you know, that then really in this triple combination led to the recent breakthrough in now having effective therapy in terms of restoration of CFTR function in a majority of our patients.
Marcus, I would like to ask you, what is your opinion? Do these causal therapies bear the potential to reduce the number of other symptomatic treatments in people with cystic fibrosis? As we all know, patients with cystic fibrosis are overloaded with treatments to maintain their health.
Yes, Doika, you know, as you say, I think there's a real potential for this. And I also agree that this is a highly relevant question for our patients, as it implies that there may be an opportunity also by treating the underlying defect of the disease to be able to reduce the symptomatic therapies. I think it's a little bit early to make the call yet. And my personal feeling is that it will depend a lot on the stage, yeah, or the severity of lung disease in the individual patient. If there is bronchiectasis, if there is chronic irreversible lung damage, that there will also be a continued need to treat problems like infection with anti-infectives, but also mucolytics. Probably we will also need anti-inflammatory strategies. We know that some of our patients are already trying this to reduce symptomatic therapies. Personally, I think we should do this in a very controlled way. And in this context, there are currently several studies on the way that test the effect of withdrawal, for example, of hypertonic saline or pulmozyme. And I think that's the right way to do it. But again, it will depend on the severity of lung disease in the individual patient.
And this could also be the case why some patients might also be still more susceptible to infections, even under CFTR modulating therapy. Because up to now, we are really concerned that our CF patients meet each other and exchange their bacteria. And I guess a lot of them is hoping that this changes now with the new highly effective modulator therapies. But I'm not absolutely sure whether this is really true or if it depends on, as you said, the state of CF lung disease at the start of the CFTR modulating therapy.
Yeah, I agree with you, Miriam. We have to accept that there are still unknowns at the moment. Yeah, this triple combination therapy has been introduced fairly recently. And I also agree with you that I expect that, you know, also with the current level of functional restoration, which is probably in the range of plus minus 50% of normal CFTR function, that the patients will remain more susceptible.
Yeah, but actually 50% is something nobody had possibly dreamed about, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago, just the small group of patients that were under the treatment with Ivacaftor showed comparable effects and all the others had just a small improvement. So I think we had taken a really big step in the right direction. But you are right, we are still not at 100% or at least 70 or 80%. So there's still room for further improvement.
Yeah, it's a huge step. But again, at this level, and we know patients with residual function mutations that are in this range, we know that they are more susceptible to infection. And so far, and also from our own clinical experience, we have not been able to eradicate chronic infections yet by starting CFTR modulation with triple combination. And so therefore, I think we need more data, both on eradication as well as prevention before we can tell our patients that they have to be less careful and that we do not need precautions for, you know, cross-infection anymore.
Yeah.
Another important issue is the side effects of CFTR modulators. Marcus, how long are long-term safety and side effects being monitored? What are the most common side effects of medication that should lead to a discontinuation of CFTR-modulated therapy?
Yeah, that's obviously an important question, long-term safety and side effects. So if we think about the first CFTR modulator that has been approved and become available, Ivacaftor monotherapy, we have safety data now for more than 10 years. For the new triple combination therapy, we have the phase 2 and the phase 3 clinical data, and there's currently an open label extension study going on that is planned for 4 years. So this is a long-term study. I think it's one of the, if not the longest study. The 24-week data have already been reported. And we're very consistent with the previous clinical trials. So if you ask about specific side effects, what has been repeatedly reported and observed across the different CFTR modulators is an elevation of liver enzymes. About 10% of patients have elevated liver enzymes in about 2% to a level that the treatment is temporarily interrupted, and less than 1% where it has been discontinued. Another observation of side effects has been a development of rash events that are often transient and rarely resulted in the need to interrupt the treatment. And there are reports of increase of creatine kinase, as well as a subtle increase in the blood pressure that are probably clinically less relevant. So overall, in addition to the durable effects in the efficacy, the CFTR modulators, including triple combination, have shown an overall well-tolerated and overall good safety profile. But I totally agree with you that it will be critical to obtain long-term data, especially as this is a combination of three small molecules.
And Marcus, in the studies leading to approval of these drugs, it was sometimes difficult to differentiate between side effects and somehow wanted effects. So for example, an increase in cough or sputum at the beginning of the therapy could also be a wanted effect. Do you think that this could also be somehow hard to differentiate for long-term safety if you look at things like, for example, rates of epithelial tumors that are somehow known to occur in CF patients at a younger age than in people without cystic fibrosis, and could also be difficult to differentiate. Is this something we see because the patients get older under CFTR triple modulator therapy, or is this a side effect of our triple modulating therapy?
That's a good and tough question. Yeah. Another example, for example, is headache. Yeah. which is an adverse event or side effect that has been reported by many patients, where I could also imagine, or where I think that it's very likely that this is sort of a wanted, desirable effect when the CFTR chloride channel is activated and the sinuses are flushed out. Now, regarding increased risk of carcinomas, of epithelial tumors, I think we have some epidemiology data there, but we don't have any mechanistic data. So my gut feeling would be that this could actually be related to CFTR dysfunction. And if this is the case, then I would expect that restoration of CFTR function can reduce this problem of early onset carcinoma in different epithelial tissues, including the GI tract, probably also the lung and other epithelial organs. But then again, as we are only getting partial restoration so far, that helps our patients to get much older. It could even be that we will see more tumors in generally more healthy CF patients and older CF patients in the future.
Yeah. So looking to the patients with CF that can't receive this highly effective therapy yet, so there are about 10% of the patients that cannot be treated with these highly effective modulators because their genotype is not constituted with at least one F508del allele. And most of these patients show premature termination codons. And at least the trials I'm aware of, trying substances to overread these PTCs, have not been successful. Do you think that there's anything coming for these patients in the next years, or do they have to wait forever?
Yes. Yeah, so as you say, most of the remaining 10 to 15% are patients with X or stop mutations that cause premature termination codons. And I think the current strategy here is very similar to the development of the CFTR modulators, and that is to use high throughput screening to identify more effective read-through agents. So, I mean, we've known for a long time, and we've done clinical trials with potential read-through agents before we had CFTR modulators, for example, with aminoglycosides like topramycin. Another compound was the PTC-124 or ataluren. And I think the issue here was that the potency was not sufficient. And I think there is some encouraging recent preclinical data using high throughput screening that could really lead to more efficacious PTC suppressor compounds. At the same time, these patients do not only have these PTC mutations, but some of them also have mutations that will not be amenable to pharmacologic restoration. If you think about large deletions, for example, and there, for a long time, we had the notion or the concept that we can explore alternative targets. So we know that there are alternative chloride channels in the airways, such as the calcium-activated chloride channel, and we now even know the molecular identity, TMEM16A. And since recently, a first activator compound for this channel. And we also know that the epithelial sodium channel, ENaC, probably plays an important role in airway surface or in the pathogenesis of airway surface dehydration and impaired mucociliary clearance. And we have a spectrum of long-acting inhibitors. So I think these are still promising alternative strategies. And then, I'm coming back to the beginning of our conversation, that gene therapy that comes in different flavors now compared to almost 30 years ago. And that is that in addition to the sort of the traditional approach of gene delivery in a vector, there are now also strategies for mRNA replacement, actually followed by many of the companies that are currently working on the mRNA-based SARS-CoV-2 vaccines. And this could be a relatively low-hanging fruit if patients can inhale stable mRNA CFTR, and if this gets integrated into the epithelial cells of the airways. And then there's this emerging field of gene editing, yeah, where in theory, it is possible to correct the individual mutation of the individual patient. There are still the same issues like 25 years ago with delivery and targeted repair. It will probably also be more difficult in other organs compared to the lung. But I think all of these are still opportunities that should be followed and pursued for these remaining patients.
So my next question about the availability of the therapy. In many European countries, patients with cystic fibrosis still don't have access to these life-changing drugs because their current price makes these drugs unaffordable for their healthcare systems. Marcos, do you think that the CFTR modulators should be priced at affordable levels proportionate to each country's situation?
From a medical and clinical perspective, you know, speaking for all healthcare providers, but also for the patients, we and the patients really want timely access. Yeah. At the same time, healthcare budgets are limited, and the regulatory authorities and payers, they have to make decisions for the entire population of a country. And I think finding good solutions for access to these transformative medicines will really be critical to make sure that the patients can really benefit from these developments. And in Germany, as I understand it, we have a system where a certain percentage, a certain budget of the healthcare budget for drugs is reserved for innovative medicines. Not only for cystic fibrosis, but also if you think about oncology, for example, if you think about biologicals for chronic inflammatory diseases. And we are in a lucky situation that so far this pot that has been reserved, that has been sufficient that we can provide access to these drugs as soon as they are approved. Obviously, I'm aware that this is much more challenging and difficult in other countries, especially the so-called lower and middle income countries. But I know that there are other examples where such solutions were found, for example, with antiretroviral, also expensive antiretroviral combination therapies for HIV. So I would really support this and support this idea also for cystic fibrosis, but I think this will really be up to healthcare payers and politicians to find these solutions.
And would possibly reducing the number of available CFTR modulators for special patient groups help or not help in this situation? Because at the moment, at least in Germany, there are three different combination therapies available for patients that are homozygous for FIVOL, but we know that one of them is clearly more effective than the other two. And would it be reasonable to reduce the number of preparations or not, or just do that for special age groups? Because this situation with three available preparations is only true for patients 12 years and older.
That's a good question. I mean, as you know, the more recently introduced drugs are typically more expensive, yeah, than the drugs that have already been on the market for a while. So I think in this context, this would not help to sort of eliminate the quote unquote older drugs. So I think eventually every patient should be treated with the most effective drug restoring CFTR function. At the moment, this is the recently introduced triple combination therapy, but this could even change in the future. And I'm still optimistic that we will be able to further increase the amount of functional restoration. And for the time being, ivacaftor monotherapy and the existing dual combination therapies, I think they still have a role, going back to Stoica's questions, in countries where the latest generation is not yet accessible to patients. And then, as you mentioned, in countries where, you know, all drugs are accessible, especially for children, where we now have approval for Ivacaftor or even for infants, yeah, from the age of 4 months, and Lumacaftor, Ivacaftor from the age of 2 years, where it will take a while to take the triple combination down to this age group. And I think these are really the two key roles that I see for these older or first generation CFTR modulator drugs.
So one more question to discuss. As we know, the age at which patient could start modulator therapy has gradually decreased. It started at 12 years and over, then 6 years and over, and finally some modulators have been approved in infants, 4 months old infants, or 1 year old infants with cystic fibrosis. Marcus, what is your opinion about the future of patients that may have the opportunity to be treated with highly effective CFTR modulators from birth? Do you think that they would need additional symptomatic therapies? And if so, which?
Yeah, Stoika, I really think that we'll be able to treat lung disease much better if we start very early. Yeah, if we really manage to start from birth, which is now also possible as we have newborn screening, yeah, in many countries. I think it's technically possible. We have to develop the drugs to this age group. And then again, I think we'll be able to treat the lung disease much better. But potentially, I think we also have a potential to then have long-term benefits on the other organs. Yeah, we already have some data that early start of Ivacaftor, for example, has protective effects on the exocrine pancreas. I think we also have opportunities to have long-term benefits in terms of preventing liver disease or bone disease or diabetes. So I think with early start, we really have an opportunity to change this disease from a still fatal disease to a treatable chronic condition. There's one potential challenge I can see, and that is the issue of adherence. Yeah, lifelong adherence that I think will be critical and maybe not so easy to explain to an apparently healthy adolescent, for example. And in this context, again, from the CF ferret model that I mentioned, but also from clinical observations and case reports in the literature, we already know that discontinuation of this treatment will lead to, you know, again, rapid deterioration where the disease comes back at a later stage. And I think this will be one of our big future challenges, but overall in a bright scenario that we will be able to really treat this disease much better.
You already mentioned the newborn screening for cystic fibrosis, and at the moment we start symptomatic therapy more or less immediately with diagnosis, either by newborn screening or clinical diagnosis. Do you think we have to start with symptomatic therapy in infants that are diagnosed by newborn screening and immediately are treated with highly effective CFTR modulator therapies as well? Or can we wait for symptoms under, for example, sensitive diagnostic monitoring? What is your gut feeling for this?
Again, it's difficult to speak to this also in the absence of data. But I think with the level of functional correction we are seeing, I think there is an opportunity that we could, you know, with these drugs pharmacologically turn the channel on, you know, and then sort of a wait and watch strategy with sensitive outcome measures of lung disease, but also extrapulmonary manifestations.
Yeah, so somehow turning the coin in the older patients, we want an observational off therapy, and in the infants, you would see whether we have to take some symptomatic therapies on board as needed, more or less.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us for this ERS podcast. I have enjoyed taking part in it. And thank you to Markus and Stoika for your contributions and insights on the topic. You can visit the ERS Respiratory channel each month for more podcasts featuring discussion between experts on the latest hot topics in respiratory medicine.